Now stay tuned for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
It is Sunday morning on 94.7 WPVC. This is Sean McCord subbing for Rick Moore on the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. And my guest this morning is Andrew Burrell. Did I get that right, Andrew?
Yes, you did. I am so excited to be here, Sean.
Oh, Andrew, it is such a pleasure to have you here. You have such an inspiring life story, and I've known you for a few years, and the more I find out about you, the more fascinated I am by it. Let's just do a summary. Let's do a summary first, and then we'll get into the details. You grew up in Louisa. You had many reasons to have an unhappy childhood. You were being raised by a single mother. You had a brother. You had you yourself were going through some traumas. Then you had some deaths in the family, and at some point, you kind of took charge of your own life. You left Louisa. You lived in New York. You lived in L.A. You pursued a career in acting. Then circumstances brought you back here to Charlottesville. You got into the University of Virginia, your mother's dream. Be very successful there. In the time that I've known you, you've been a writer for the Huffington Post. You've done a TED Talk. You've graduated with the honor of honors. And now you are a young entrepreneur who is starting a new business of your own before going off and continuing your career in theater. It's an amazing story, and that's why I want to get into details, because I think there may be a lot of people out there who could be inspired by what you've managed to do for yourself, as well as to hear you tell your own story and the kind of decisions that you face along the way. So let's start at the beginning. You were born a poor white child in Louisa. What was that like? What was your childhood like?
Yeah, Louisa County was, I think, one of my favorite places, and still to this day is one of my favorite places on the entirety of the planet. I was blessed to grow up in a community where they value you for not only the typical where you come from or who you know, but like as you as an individual and as a person. And I think the one thing that really Louisa gave me was a sense of self-confidence in terms of just being brutal. Like a lot of people have that like kind of Southern country, like bless your heart mentality.
Right.
And even like in theater, I remember one of my theater teachers, like one of the first times I was on stage, made a very like fat reference. And when you think of, because I was very big.
Let's talk about that. You were a big kid.
Yes.
I mean, you're 13 years old, 350 pounds. I've seen some of the pictures. I look at them and say, yeah, I guess that's Andrew. So you were a big kid, and you say you got support from teachers, but what about from peers? What about from your schoolmates?
I think in middle school I was really, really bullied in terms of like my weight. I managed to lose about 150 pounds. I went into high school, and I mean, I ended up getting like, I mean, that's the thing about Louisa County and the South in general, is that sometimes you get bullied, but I think that bullying creates either like it can have a really negative, like catastrophic effect on someone, and it can affect them, excuse me, for the rest of their life, or you can kind of jump out of it and claim your identity and then move forward. And I think that that's what happened with me with my weight was people would make fun of me, and it kind of gave me a thick skin and a sense of humor, because I would always like come home and I would be like, Mom, they're making fun of me. And she's like, well, what did you say back to them? Like, did you make sure you made fun of them back? And at the time, I don't think that was the best advice.
Was that really her advice?
That was her advice. She was like, well, did you get them back just as much?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's coming from like a very like lawyer mentality. My mother was a lawyer. but I ended up getting like most talkative the end of my like eighth grade middle school year. I ended up getting a ton of senior superlatives in my yearbook, because I was able to kind of like grow out of my insecurities and into, I think, living truthfully under the circumstances that I was given.
So let's talk a little bit about your mother, because she plays an important part in your story. Was did she grow up there too? Was your family established in that part of the country?
No, my mom came from California and then grew up with her grandmother in Texas till the age of 13, where she just went through a lot of issues with her grandmother during the time. It was the 60s and 70s in very southern Texas, so they weren't the most, that wasn't the most safe environment. So she traveled across the country by herself from Texas to Washington, D.C. at the age of 15. By herself. She was homeless in Washington, D.C., like panhandling, like on the street, just trying to like get money, like just trying to get by. And she met a woman who is now what I know is like my grandma. Her name was Pam King. She had worked for like two presidential offices, campaigns, took my mom in under her wing. My mom got her high school education, got her undergrad, got her law degree, all from coming from Texas, like living homeless.
Yeah. Wow. And so how did she end up in Louisa?
Yes. So she met a man, as most people do. And that man convinced her to come to Louisa County. And then that didn't work out. So we stayed here, though.
Yeah.
Because it was a really good community, and my mom ended up working with like UVA in different regards and different roles. So
it was you. So it was your mom and you and your brother.
Yes.
What was your brother's name?
Aaron.
And Aaron was your younger brother?
He was my older brother.
Your older brother. Yes. Excuse me. All right. So you're 13 years old, 14 years old, you're in middle school and high school. You're in Louisa. You're a big kid.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it upon yourself to literally reshape yourself. There's no easy way to put it. Then what happened?
Following that, it just kind of got a little bit worse progressively. My house ended up burning down right when I was going into high school, which was very unexpected. That was hard to come back from. Very shortly after that, my brother had committed suicide. He had grown up with Asperger syndrome and faced much more severe bullying than I did. He always felt, I think, kind of in another planet when he was around people his own age. He did well with adults. He loved business. Like, he would go to high school with a briefcase and a suit on, and I think that was kind of like his armor in terms of like emotional safety, and he just couldn't face the bullying anymore. During his homecoming, he went with a girl from his special needs class. And he literally spent like weeks trying to get ready and like find the best suit. And my mom was like, he kept trying to make excuses on not to go. And he'd be like, I don't like my outfit. I think my mom probably bought him like seven different suits in order to find like the perfect one. And he was at the dance, and my mom like forced me to go with him like out on the side. And like, I was still in like middle school, so that just wasn't the most socially like fun thing for me to do. But this boy, during the very last song, pantsed my brother, like when he was slow dancing with this girl, which he's like never done before. So I think that kind of was like the start of me deciding to not ever try to cause harm to someone else if I can help it, or bring that kind of pain to someone.
Yeah, and that's an important lesson to walk away with. I mean, a lot of us, you know, I was bullied as a kid in junior high, too, and then high school, I got tall. And so that, then the bullying changed, because then it was much like little guys who wanted to take down the tall guy. And you're right, at a certain point, we just have to decide, how are we going to respond? Are we going to turn around and be bullies ourselves?
Mm.
Are we going to bully on someone else who's vulnerable?
Mm.
Or are we going to develop empathy?
Mm.
And some of us, it takes longer than others. So my guest, Andrew Burrell, talking about growing up in Louisa County on 94.7 WPVC on the Wake Up Call. So again, I'm very sorry about your brother.
Thank you.
So your house burned down. Your brother dies. How old are you at that point?
I think I was 15.
50, so, yeah. So it was 16. Like sophomore high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you start is there like a moment you can sort of point to where you say you start losing the weight, you start trying to take control of your own life, or is it, or do you think it was a series of things that happened around then?
You know, Sean, I think no one's asked me that question before, and I think that there was actually a moment in high school that I said, okay, I can do this, is that there's a thing in Virginia called the Virginia Governor School for the Visual and Performing Arts and Humanities.
Yes.
Which is the longest name on the planet.
The Governor School.
Right. But it takes place in the summer. Every high school in the state has eligibility to audition. Our high school hadn't had someone selected for theater or music, I think, in like 12 years. It's very competitive.
Really?
Yes. And they have 4,000 people audition every summer for the program, and they take 40 for theater every summer. And my theater teacher was like, Andrew, I think that you should audition. Like, you know, you got what it takes, you know. But I always felt like, oh, she's just saying that because she has to say it because she's a teacher. And I know now that she did have that faith in me. And I went and auditioned, and I was offered a spot. And I think that that was kind of like the moment that I said, the arts are totally realistic. I can have a career in this. If I just beat out, you know, 3,000 odd something people, then maybe I am good enough, or I do have a truth to share through the stage or through whatever kind of platform the arts will allow me to have and perpetuate. So I think that that was a really strong moment for me where I realized I am good enough to be.
And what was the Governor's School like?
Ah, the Governor's School was amazing. It was the first time, I think, actually, in my life that there was a sense of community and a sense of renaissance through, like, a renaissance of personal identity for, I think, everyone that attended. It was every morning you were just surrounded by violinists, dancers, by visual artists, by just extremely smart, creative, and daring people who were willing to make and take a risk. And I think that that summer kind of taught me that, again, I am good enough and that people are good enough to be. And I mean, I have friends that went and attended the program that are now at and have graduated now from Juilliard, from USC, NYU Tisch, some of the best arts programs in the nation. And I'm just humbled to be on their journey as much as they are on mine.
So you come back to Louisa from your summer away at the Governor's School. You feel different. You've grown up, and you're looking at the arts now as something like this is something you can do. This can be your life. So what was that like coming back? And I mean, did people treat you differently? Were you reflecting a new version of yourself?
I think that people did treat me differently in terms of just kind of respecting my art more. Louisa kind of reminded me of a high school musical type scene for the fact that our theater teacher, Margaret Murphy, Peggy Sadler, which is one name, and Jalita Hopkins did a great job in making sure that people of all backgrounds felt safe and were able to be in the theater. Every one of our shows sold out, which is like kind of unheard of for a country rural community school.
Yeah.
And I think that people saw me and they were like, wow, that boy might be going places. And I think that when I first got back, I kind of had a bigger head because I was like, I went to the Governor's School. And my teachers and friends were very quick to like check me with the Louisa County check that they do. They were just like, Andrew, you can't come up in this school acting like you're better than everyone else, because, you know, we all start from the same place. And I'm like, y'all are right. Like, thank you for reminding me of that. So I think that, yeah, I was different, but I knew my surroundings more, and I think I knew the motivation of people more.
And did you know then that you'd be leaving Louisa?
I think so, because I wanted to go to college and I wanted to go to a performing arts program.
Yeah.
And I know that I wanted to go away from Louisa as far as I could, just because I wanted to have another kind of viewpoint. And I knew that in Virginia, there's only a couple of schools that are like really, really known for the arts, and even that they aren't like nationally really that known. So I wanted to kind of go to the best that I could get into.
So it's about quarter after the hour. My guest is Andrew Burrell. This is Sean McCord hosting on the Wake Up Call this morning on 94.7 WPVC. So I don't want to get my timeline mixed up here. I know that you had another family tragedy that came up around this time, but I'm not sure if it was after you left or before you left when you had graduated high school, or or afterwards. So can you lay out the timeline for me? What were those next couple of years like?
Yeah, so I went to the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in Los Angeles, California.
And how old were you then?
I was 18.
Yeah, so you graduated high school in Louisa, went off to Los Angeles.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And I was earning my 4-year BFA in musical theater. And at the end,
where is that? We're in Los Angeles.
It is right on Hollywood and Vine, like right next to the Capitol Records building.
Nice.
Diagonal. So every morning I would literally walk by the Capitol Records building. It was awesome.
And where were you living?
Like right there, like in the dorms.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually like woke up and saw the Hollywood sign every morning. It was awesome.
Yeah, 18-year-old boy in the big city for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about that school.
Oh, it was amazing. Oh my gosh, it was eye-opening because everyone there was ridiculously talented. Like it was overwhelming. Inadequacy was a big thing, just because you could see people doing like 8 pirouettes and then like singing like flawless like Pavarotti like notes and then going and giving the most like daring and didactic like monologue that you've ever seen in your entire life. So it's just like, am I good enough to be here? Which I think, yes, I was.
Well, that was what I was going to ask. I mean, you know, in Louisa, it's a small pond, so it doesn't take much to be a big fish. So what did it feel like to be in LA surrounded by all these talented people from around the country? Did you still feel like a big fish?
Yeah, from around the world.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah, it was. I felt like a very small fish, but I think that as soon as I started learning to not try to be something that I wasn't or be other people that I thought were talented and live truthfully as my own person and know what I was good at and capitalize on what I was good at, then I was just as good and able to be in the same room as them. But I think that sometimes we see someone that we think is so much better than us in our field and we say, oh, well, I just have to make myself like them. And then if I'm like them, then everything good will happen and everything will fall into place. And I think that I did that for a while, like the first semester of my schooling, and I found myself to not be doing good in classes, to not be building strong and authentic relationships with my peers and faculty. And I think that I came home for break and my mama kind of gave me like a come to Jesus talk on like who I was and what I stood for. And I went back and I embraced what I was good at, like caricature roles, like musical theater singing, like kind of like knowing what my money was, you know, in terms of acting and performance. And that's when I started really shining at school to the point where professors were asking me to come out and do work. Like one of my professors asked me to sing at the Video Music Awards for the Michael Jackson tribute when he passed. So I got to sing with like all of these crazy A-lists ranging from like Beyonce to Adele to amazing people. So
Beyonce, Adele, and Jabril.
Not nearly in the same kind of bracket, but on the same stage, yes.
That is pretty amazing. So for regular listeners of the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, I like to have a lot of guests in. One of my recurring themes, for reasons you will understand, Andrew, because you know me, is making a career in the arts. Whether it's you make it your vocation or you find a way to include arts and whatever else you do in your life. And I lived in L.A. I went to college in L.A. and I lived there. But I worked mostly in film. I didn't get involved in theater myself until I came here in Virginia. And one of the biggest differences between the two cultures, I was going to say industries, the cultures, is that theater is extremely collaborative. You know, in film and in television, there's always a sense of someone else's success comes at your cost. You know, because you're free, like if you're an actor and your other friends are actors, you know, somebody gets a part that you went up for, you know, you go, oh, great, I'm happy for you. But, you know, part of you wants to shiv them in the back. And I'm afraid it's not that much different, you know, if you're a writer or director or anything else. But theater, I think, has a completely different culture. And you touched on that, in that when one person succeeds, everybody can succeed. It's not like it's a pie and it can only be sliced so many ways. Did you find that difference when you were there in L.A.?
Absolutely. I think a lot more so in the theater, but in a way, it just kind of depends on the institution you're at. Because where I was, it was very like the pie was only to be given to like the very best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like you had to kind of make sure that other people couldn't eat the pie, so you had a bite. And I was the person who I was like, I'm not going to fight you all for this pie. I'm going to just go to the store and buy my own pie and then eat on the corner. And if you would like to come over and share a piece of pie with me, I would love for that to happen. And I think that that was, again, making sure that you know what your pie is and what kind of pie you like. If you come into the room and everyone's like, that's the only pie, that's the only way to be successful, and everyone tries to like get the last piece, people forget that there's like a whole bakery like down the street. So I'm all about like innovating new kind of ways in the arts for myself to get work if I'm not working, if that makes sense.
My friend with the innovative pies is Andrew Burrell. It's about 20 after the hour on 94.7 WPVC. We'll be right back. And we're back on 94.7 WPVC. This is Sean McCord, subbing for Rick Moore on the Wake Up Call with my guest, Andrew Burrell. So, Andrew, you're in Los Angeles. You're at the, what was it called again?
American Musical and Dramatic Academy, started by Richard Burton.
In Los Angeles, you're fresh out of high school from Louisa County.
Mm-hmm.
You've been there 1 year. And then tragedy strikes again. What happened?
My mom passed away, actually. It was after one of my dance classes. It was very intense. And my friends and I were like, oh, we should go hike Runyon Canyon just for fun, which is like one of the,
yeah.
You get to the top and it's like you see all of the skyline of Los
Angeles.
Gorgeous,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you've hiked it a crazy amount of times. It was...
Once or twice.
Yeah. Yeah, I was much more in shape then. When I could make the hike a lot easier than I could now, if I'm sure. But I talked to him. I'm one of those obnoxious people that talk to my mom on the phone like 35 times a day. Like I could just get like a good coffee and I would call and be like, oh my God, I just had the best coffee. Like, blah, it's amazing. And I think I matter to her so much. It kind of pains me. And we were all hiking up Runyon Canyon and I had called my mom like 8 times that day and I had not heard from her. And I was like, this is very unusual. Cause my mom like is the person who would like send me 40 text messages just about like getting her nails done.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept calling and it got to the point where it was like 6 o'clock Los Angeles time. And I still couldn't, we were halfway up the mountain. I could not get a hold of her. So I called, the sheriff out in Louisa just cause he was like a family friend. And I was like, hey, Sheriff Fortune, I can't get in touch with mama. Like, can you please just go check in at the house just to see like if she's okay.
Yeah.
And I hadn't heard back and I just assumed that like they were talking because whenever the sheriff sees my mama, they have like a 3-hour conversation about just the dumbest things. Like, oh, did you see that tree they just planted over on like blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, how is this relevant?
Small right town now? Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got down to the bottom of the mountain and someone called me. It was one of the local police officers and he was like, where are you right now? And I was like, I honestly was just like, why is he asking me where I'm at? And I was like, I am like at the bottom of Runyon Canyon, like blah, blah, blah. And he was like, what is your address? Just wondering. And I was like, oh no, like, did they find something like illegal in my house? Like, am I getting like arrested? Like, is the NSA coming? And he had a squad of police cars in LA come out. It wasn't like just one squad car. And they came in and was like, just to let you know, your mom has passed away. We found her in the house. And I don't think I've ever had a more animalistic like breakdown. I just kind of like lost it. I went a little crazy. Like I just like fell on the floor and just cried and cried and
yeah.
cried. And I came back to Virginia to make sure all the arrangements were done and everything was good. And
so what happened? Do you mind telling me? Had she been ill?
She had a very rare blood disorder and two of her like medicines kind of counteracted.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
So just out of the blue.
Yeah.
So you were still, it was still your semester?
Mm-hmm. It was the very end of the semester.
Oh man. So how did that year end for you?
I, after all the funeral arrangements were completed and finished and done, I went back to LA, and one of my professors suggested that I take a break from school and mm-hmm. perform full time. And he was like, you know, I believe that you can do it. Like, I'll set you up with a really good manager that I know. And then the manager ended up getting me an agent.
So performance, yes, as therapy.
Yeah, it honestly, in a way.
Yeah, yeah, to kind of get you through that.
Mm-hmm.
My guest this morning is Andrew Burrell, talking about being a young performer in Los Angeles on The Wake Up Call. So what was that year like?
It was a really fun year. I mean, it was cathartic in the sense that every role I took on, it was just kind of like, I wonder what my, and I know it sounds cliche, but I was wondering, like, what would my mama be thinking? Like, what would,
well, of course, you know, of course you were wondering that.
Yeah. It was good though. It was a sad year, but it was a very successful year. I ended up getting booked as Tommy Pickles on a national tour of Rugrats the Musical with Andy Ferreira, who is he's a very reputable director. I got to appear on Modern Family.
Okay, hold on. I want to hear the Tommy Pickles voice.
Yeah. I can't. It's been so long.
It's copyrighted. You're not allowed to do it.
My agent would send me a message. He'd be like, what are you doing?
So where did you tour?
We toured all over California, the West Coast primarily. We did Colorado. We did Texas, all of the like kind of surrounding states of like the Midwest.
So the Southwest.
Southwest, yes.
Yeah. So what a strange year for you.
Yes.
I mean, to leave Louisa, to come to Los Angeles, to have a triumphant first year in school, to have your mother pass away. And I assume you had to, did you have more family there? Did you have to deal with the estate?
I have
estate?
No family. Like, it was literally my mama.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened with the estate and all that?
Yeah, it all went away. Like, I have a storage unit.
Yeah.
And everything was kind of like... taken care of from there.
Just gone. So you went back to L.A., then you started pursuing acting, and mm-hmm. you're on tour. And mm-hmm. what else? You said you were on Modern Family?
Yeah, I got to do an episode of Modern Family. I got to help on music videos, which was super fun, ranging from, like, Todrick Hall, who did, like, the Target flash mob with Beyonce. He was, like, on several Broadway shows. He was American Idol, like, runner-up. He's an amazing guy, very good artist.
Mm-hmm.
To Nickelback, to Wale, to Lloyd, all kinds of amazing people that I just never thought ever in the history of, like, my life that I would have that opportunity to be on set with these crazy famous, like, internationally known people. It was very overwhelming, humbling, but like really exciting at the same time.
And this is all while you're taking a break from school.
Yeah, this is all while I'm taking a break from school.
And so you did that for what, you said a year?
Mm-hmm.
And then went back to school?
Yes, and then I came back to Charlottesville just because I felt myself getting very, very burnt out. And I had talked to someone on the phone. It was like one of my my best friend's moms, and she'd known me since I was like very little. And she was like, so what are you going to do for college? Like, are you going to go back to college? And I had felt like myself getting kind of burnout on the arts just because it wasn't being cathartic anymore. It was more of like a product that was being like asked. It was like people were asking me to like produce this product rather than produce an art. And I wasn't finding that my art was coming from a truthful place anymore. So when she asked me about going back to college, I was like, that's a great question. What am I going to do? And she was like, you should come back to Virginia and just kind of like take a break for a minute. So
you didn't go back to the academy?
No.
in LA.
It was too hard.
Yeah, sure. So you come back to Charlottesville, mm-hmm. in your BMW.
Yeah.
That was right around when we met. I'll get to that story in a minute because I think it's a nice story. But you come back to Charlottesville. So after having been on tour and having mm-hmm. having been a working actor, Am I remembering Ron? Did you spend some time in New York too?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
What were you doing
briefly
in New York?
I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
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 I went for school, like just to, like during AMDO, you're allowed to go back and forth because they have campuses both in LA and New York. And
oh, okay.
The New York campus was actually the first one.
Got it.
I went and audited some classes for like 2 months and was just like, gotta go.
just New York itself just wasn't me.
It's beautiful. It's just at the time I just didn't have a strong foundation of like support or life or education. So I felt it just was too much. I wasn't prepared for New York at the moment.
So my guest, who was not prepared for New York, but happily came back to Virginia.
Yes.
Is Andrew Burrell. So we're talking about, this was, I guess, I want to say 3 years ago. You came back to Virginia?
Two.
Was it just 2 years ago?
Two and a half, maybe.
Two and a half,
maybe three now,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
somewhere in that time range.
Somewhere between 2 and 3 years. You find yourself find yourself back in Virginia? Your family was gone.
Mm-hmm.
You were living in Charlottesville at that mm-hmm. point. Was it a feeling that you were starting over, or was it a feeling that you were going back to your roots, or was it kind of a combination of both?
It was a combination of both. When I first got back, I was like, oh my gosh, I've made a terrible decision. Like, I could be in LA right now on set with like incredibly famous people doing really good work and having fun and living the life. And then when I got back, I had a lot of local artists that are in Virginia who are just as famous, like, you know, asking me like, oh, where did you go to college? What did you learn in college? Like, where did you finish college? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't answer that question because I didn't finish. So,
but to be fair, I mean, you're a young man. You were still, you were talking about like 20 years old mm-hmm. when you got back here. Yeah. So it was okay.
Yeah, it was, but I don't know. Like I always had a huge expectancy for myself, like a huge self expectancy to like always be doing work and doing sure. good work. And my mama always wanted me to go to the University of Virginia, always, from the time I was like little. And it pained her very much when I decided not to go there out of high school. And I had missed all of the deadlines for applying. And I knew that my grades probably weren't the greatest to get into UVA from where I was. So I started taking some classes at the local community college, Piedmont.
PVCC.
Yes, sir.
Let's give a shout out to PVCC.
Oh yeah, no, amazing they're, professors.
They're a fine school. So full disclosure, I'm on mm-hmm. I'm on the PVCC college board.
Awesome.
So I get to I need to be straightforward about yeah. that. But I've had both daughters are students there.
Mm-hmm.
My son just graduated from high school. May or may not end up there. Mm-hmm. And it really is a great local resource.
Absolutely.
And I've got a really burgeoning theater program.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Did you do some work in the theater up there?
I took classes. Like, yeah. I took a couple of classes just to stay, like, fresh on the acting. And it was great. They have a beautiful space, a beautiful new theater.
They do the Dickinson building.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. It's kind of an untapped resource here in town.
Absolutely. Practice rooms, everything yeah. an artist could need. It's wonderful. I love the theater there. And the professors, I mean, most of my professors also taught at UVA. So it's like you're getting a UVA education.
Exactly.
At
you're
like
getting
a fourth of the price.
I was just having my son was at a graduation party last night with one of his high school friends. And, you know, we were talking about him. This is an ambitious kid.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to go to mechanical engineering. He said, what are your plans? And he says, I'm going to go to PVCC for the first couple of years. He says, mm-hmm. because I'm getting a college level education.
Mm-hmm.
Without having to pay college-level
oh, yeah.
prices for it.
And the professors care so much.
Right.
Like, it was yeah. unbelievable how much they cared.
So it's a bit of a sidetrack here, but I'm a big advocate for community colleges. I went to a community college in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Not coincidentally, my dad was on the board for that college, too.
Nice.
And
self-fulfilling prophecy.
kind of. You know, following in our parents' footsteps. And what I know now, having been to university, having worked at a university for many years, is that the people who are working in community college are there because they want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
They're not under yes. pressure to publish. They're just there because they, and not to say that if you're at the university, mm-hmm. you don't like teaching,
mm-hmm.
but university, faculty have so many other pressures on them,
mm-hmm.
running departments, publishing, et cetera. People at the community college, public college level, they're just there to teach and they yeah. love their students and they love what they're teaching. Having a conversation about teaching, this is Sean McCord with my guest, Andrew Burrell, on 94.7 WPVC, The Wake Up Call. So right about there
mm-hmm.
is when we met.
Yes.
Now, I got involved in theater here in Charlottesville. I almost said Los Angeles. Here in Charlottesville a few years ago. And I was involved in the first year of the revival of Bar Hoppers.
Yes.
Bar Hoppers had been this popular venue for short plays some years ago. And then I think it was, I do want to say 2013. I think that's right. Mm-hmm. 2013 is revived. And I wrote a piece and I also got to direct a piece. And I was auditioning. And as a director, I love auditions because you're just asking talented people to come in and you hand them a sheet of paper and you say, have fun with this.
Mm.
You set out right away, Andrew, because That's exactly what you did. Mm. You just had fun with the piece. I've told this story before because I love this. You were given a play you hadn't seen mm-hmm. before. You had a scene partner, and you were just you were reading the scene. I said, "Well, I want to shake things up a little bit because when I'm auditioning, I want to get a sense." It's kind of like speed dating, you know. Mm, yeah. You want to get a sense. Can I work with this actor? Mm. So an important thing for me is how well do they take direction?
Mm.
So I told you that you were coming in and you were introducing yourself to this character, and I said, and your mama always told you that the best way to make a good impression on somebody is to look them straight in the eye. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And then I told your scene partner, never look up from the floor.
Ah, yes.
But I didn't tell you that. So you came in and you got this paper and you're reading your lines and you're trying to get this guy's attention. And I think I had him sweeping or something. Uh-huh. And so he's moving around and he's sweeping and you're literally running circles around him.
I remember.
Just saying your lines, trying to get in front of him to look him straight in the eye to make a good impression. And it was hilarious.
Yeah.
It was just the energy you brought and your commitment, even in an audition, your commitment mm-hmm. to the character to do, say, well, my director told me to do this crazy thing, so I'm going to do it. And I said on the spot, I have got to cast this guy. And as it turns out, your scene partner, Ray, you ended up, because your chemistry was so good.
Ray's great.
Yeah, yeah. So you guys ended up doing this thing together, and it was awesome.
That was an incredible time.
It was. And it was one of the best auditioning experiences I've had.
Hey, so that's awesome.
So thank you for that.
Yes, absolutely. So, thank you for casting me.
Oh, it was great fun. So we did that show together. What a talented crew that was. We the Bar Hoppers came back this summer. I wasn't able to be a part of it. I guess it was fall.
Mm, yes.
I wasn't able to be a part of it this time around. But I hope it continues. And so a plug for Bar Hoppers there. Keep an eye out for that. It's short plays in local bars and restaurants here in Charlottesville. Yeah. Let's hope it comes back.
I was also not. I went to the audition and then I realized I was going to be in Buenos Aires during the time, and I was like, I can't do it. I would have loved you though.
Yeah. Oh, right. Well, Buenos Aires this year. We'll get to that because I want to talk about your Buenos Aires trip. But let's keep on moving through the timeline. We're at about 35 minutes after the hour on 94.7 WPVC. The Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. My guest is Andrew Burrell on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. So, you're back in Charlottesville
mm-hmm.
with your BMW. I'm sorry, I keep mentioning that because it was so funny. It was this shiny little guy with his BMW tooling around Charlottesville, and acting in Bar Hoppers, and then you applied to UVA.
Yes, that was I peaked. That is when I peaked. I got into UVA. It was probably one of the happiest days of my life. I was very excited.
So you came in as a second year student?
End of my second year.
Right.
So I had enough credits from AMDA, from Piedmont, from like APs in high school to have like be at near the end of my second year.
Okay. All right.
It was amazing.
So somewhere up there, Mama was smiling down on you.
Oh yeah. She was, I'm sure, just beyond ecstatic, like wonderfully proud and just probably in shock that I got in.
we're going to, you know what? We'll take a little bit of break.
Awesome.
And we'll come right back. Welcome back. It's Sean McCord subbing for Rick Moore on the Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC with my guest, Andrew Burrell. So Andrew, your long journey
Yes.
brings you back to Charlottesville and brings you back to UVA
mm-hmm.
as you had enough credits to finish up your second year.
Yes.
So you kind of came in as a 2.5 year.
Yes.
And you went straight into what?
The drama department.
Of course.
Yes. Which is interesting because there's only like one other school in the nation that calls it the Department of Drama rather than the Department of Theater.
Oh, okay.
Which I just think that's so interesting. Whenever I tell people I was a drama major, they're like, you mean theater? And I'm like, nope.
No, that sounds very Jefferson, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yes. Ah,
Department of Drama. Yeah. Yeah. Your third year at Department of Drama. Okay. So that's what you spent the past two little bit more years doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you were doing a lot of things.
Yes.
Let's. What order should we start them with? You became a representative.
Yeah.
For the college in the ACC.
Absolutely. So they have the ACC kind of like symposium for change every year, and they there's 13 schools in the ACC currently, and they select people from each school. It's like a little delegation that gets sent to the university that's hosting it. So this last year, the University of Notre Dame was like the main host. And it was about issues revolving around socioeconomic status, diversity, religion, family background. And a lot of times UVA is seen in the light of being not the most diverse place, or maybe diversity not being at the forefront of what the image and aesthetic of UVA is.
Right.
And although it is very present diversity.
Even with what diversity we have.
Yes.
There's a lot of problems we haven't figured out.
Absolutely. A lot of problems that we haven't figured out. But a huge part about UVA is student self-governance, and we in the last year faced issues revolving around race, around the culture of sexual assault on college campuses.
Right, because this past couple of years, while you're doing all that, is when the Rolling Stone article came out.
Yes.
Is when the unfortunate incident happened with Martise Johnson, and you're out there representing UVA to these other schools, and you're doing it through theater.
Yes.
How does that work?
Unknowingly through theater. They weren't aware until like after we had to give our closing remarks. They were like, how did you like manage to do this? And I was like, through the arts is how I managed to like relay this message. I think it was a huge issue with sexual assault, especially because I had a lot of, although I transferred into UVA, I had a lot of friends that went to UVA from the Governor's School program where I had attended in high school.
So you were catching up with old friends.
Yeah, honestly, that's the best way to put it, is that I felt I was really, it was like a reunion in a way, and it was like I was finally kind of part of their club, which felt great.
Nice.
And it's hard because I've seen people I've known since like kindergarten at UVA that went through sexual assault and had experienced that. And, you know, there's institutional kind of like measures in place to say, here, you can come talk to like counseling and psychological services, but like what is there for the heart? And I think that theater is the best kind of cathartic release and healer of the spirit when there seems to be no other outlet. At least that was my experience. And we devised a whole theatrical piece around sexual assault, misconduct, that featured over 20 people from the UVA community who had either gone through sexual assault or identified with the culture surrounding it. And it was just amazing to see three quarters of these people had never set foot on a stage, let alone their first time doing it, talking about experiences of sexual assault. So it's experiences like that that I kind of brought to the ACC and saying, you know, instead of just talking about change, we should do change. And they said, how do you do that? And act, you know, Jefferson, I don't want to be that person who quotes Jefferson all the time, but he did.
We can't do a show without quoting Jefferson.
It's true. he had one good quote, a really great. Well, he had several.
He had one or two.
The Declaration of Independence. but his quote that resonates most with me is that action, like when in doubt, when in question, action will delineate and define who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's so intrinsic of what theater is and performing arts are, especially at a school like UVA where the arts aren't as kind of valued or showcased or highlighted as much as like, say, Yale or NYU or USC or UCLA, where they have these thriving, amazing arts programs. You know, it's still a work in progress at UVA.
Well, I'm not sure I totally agree with you. I mean, UVA, okay, it's not, I mean, you know, people don't come, not like Yale, people don't come to the UVA drama school, you know, and a lot of people come to UVA for law, for history, for medicine, for engineering.
Business,
of course. But I think when you get here, you realize how thriving the arts are.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's mainly because there's such a close relationship between arts in the university and arts in the community.
Yeah.
That's one of the things we love about this town is there's so much going on here. Just you know, inspired by the university,
absolutely.
But in the community itself, you know, taking Ix Park. The textile plant and mm-hmm. rebuilding it into an arts park.
Absolutely.
And community theater here in town with my buddies over at Live Arts.
Yeah. And love Live Arts.
Yeah, yeah. we were just talking about up at PVCC and the professional level performances that we get at UVA. My wife and I are, well, usually season ticket holders for Heritage,
which is the Bob Chapel series. Just genius.
Bob Chapel is. Bob Chapel was one of my guests here, one of my first guests here several months ago. Unfortunately, because I'm away this summer, I won't be going to Heritage. But we've had friends come down from New York, and we've taken them to shows at UVA, and they're like, that's a Broadway level show.
Oh, don't get me wrong. The Charlottesville art scene is thriving, like bustling, amazing, like huge. I just think that at UVA, like as an undergrad, like the institutional support for like student theater and kind of like it's just not as much as I would have liked.
You have to fight for resources. Exactly. Well, you were involved with Spectrum Theater, right?
Spectrum, first year players, all of the student organizations on grounds. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's kind of one of my platforms at UVA, and a lot like my fourth year drama superlative was, and I'm totally open about it. That's why I think people come to me, is that it was most likely to have a revolution against a member of the faculty or staff for the University of Virginia Department of Drama, which I found funny because I think I come from a school like the American Musical and Dramatic Academy where resources were so open. If you wanted to do a student show and use the Black Box Theater, you fill out a request form and have a faculty member sponsor you. And then bam, like as long as there's nothing in it, you're able to use it and create an amazing story. And same way with my friends at VCU Arts and JMU and Shenandoah, like it's very easy to access the space. And I think I've had a 10 out of 10 experience at the University of Virginia. I would never, ever change anything about it. I just wish that the Department of Drama would have let students use their space a little more.
Okay. All right. Well, let's put a shout out to our friends at the Department of Drama from one of your esteemed recent graduates here. Maybe that's one thing you can do to improve things. So talk about your theater experience at UVA.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, what shows stand out?
I think my favorite show I was in was Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Our director was just brilliant. His name was David Dalton. He's also directing some shows for Heritage this summer, The Odd Couple. So if you are in town, make sure to go see that. Teresa Davis, she was
Lady T.
Lady T, beautiful people of the universe. This woman is just life changing. She is a force of light and magic. She was my academic advisor. She just one of the most connected theater people I know, and just one of the most brave choice makers. And she gave me a quote recently, and she said, "In order to have revolutionary art, you need revolutionary artists." And I think that that's something that will stick with me for the rest of my life. But UVA gave me the opportunity to do so much and travel to so many different places, ranging we got to go to Buenos Aires, an international tour with the Virginia Glee Club, which was just amazing.
So I saw your pictures from that. I was enjoying that vicariously. How did that come about? What was that like?
So the Virginia Glee Club just celebrated our 145th year at UVA. It's crazy. Like Woodrow Wilson was a member.
Wait a minute. Taciturn Woodrow Wilson?
Yes, like President Woodrow Wilson.
The man who people would have bets to see if they can get him to speak two words?
Yep.
He was in the Glee Club?
He was. He was definitely in the Glee Club. He was a member. It's crazy. So I think I never realized that all these people were in it until they like tried to get me to join. And they were like, look at our alums. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
Me and Woody.
Yeah, right. That's actually like Get Woody is our audition. It's like Get Woody ? And I don't know. That was before my time. But we went to Buenos Aires to celebrate our 145th anniversary. Mm-hmm. Went with our Grammy award winning conductor, Frank Albinder. He won a Grammy for Chanticleer. The Voices of Love or the Voices of Color or something. I can't remember what he called his album, but it was amazing, beautiful. And
I've heard Chanticleer before. They're incredible.
Genius people. He was the, I think, standing artistic director for a while, arranger. He just did everything with them. And then he went on to now direct the Washington Men's Camarada at the Kennedy Center and the Virginia Glee Club. So he drives down 2 days a week just to like conduct us, which I'm like, that's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So Buenos Aires was amazing. It was brilliant, so much fun. I got to like dance tango, which was like the tango, the flamingo. It was just such a fun, so much steak, so much beef.
And somewhere in there, you also became a writer for Huffington Post.
Yes.
How did that happen?
I love them. So I was working for the Contemplative Sciences Center at the University of Virginia, and they have a really good relationship where they bring in different speakers and kind of engagements. And three of those were the Dalai Lama, Arianna Huffington, and Stedman Graham. And I got to meet Arianna, and that kind of like stemmed into a ability to write for them, like on matters pertaining to college life, spirituality, diversity. So I've just kind of been doing that ever since.
So you're going to continue writing for them?
Oh, absolutely. It is my favorite, one of my favorite things to do.
And also somewhere in there. And seriously, Andrew, I don't know how you, I don't know where you find the time.
Lots of coffee.
Also somewhere in there, you did a TED Talk.
Yes.
It was a local TED Talk, but tell me how that came about.
And then
for people, I'm going to interrupt for a second, but you should go on to YouTube and find Andrew's TED Talk, Andrew Burrill, B-U-R-R-I-L-L. Thank you. It's a really fascinating talk. It was kind of what inspired me to have you come in here in the first place. But tell me how that came about, and then tell me a little bit about what you talked about.
Yeah, that came about just because I think a lot of people are aware of like where I started and my story about like where I've gotten to where I am now. And a lot of people just wanted to know how I did it. And I specifically always answered like the performing arts. Like, I found peace through the performing arts. And a lot of people just found that to be kind of like a fake answer, like kind of like a cliche answer. So I kind of delved in the talk about the specifics of what performance does for someone in terms of like, even if you're just in the car and you've had a really bad day and you turn on like your favorite song and you just like belt your face off, you know, you might not sound the best, but I bet you feel better afterwards. So it's like kind of that, but on a more like macro level, and how America as a nation needs to have like systematic change in the way we cultivate and build laws and policies around arts education at the lowest of like elementary schools to high school, and how we're still cutting funding for music programs and theater programs and how those things statistically have been researched through, I mean, the Batten Public Policy School at UVA to Harvard's like education journal to show that arts builds confidence, arts builds leaders. Some of the top, out of the top five Fortune 500 companies, I think it was like 87% of the CEOs had taken arts classes in high school. So it's like, how do we cultivate strong leaders if we take away the training that's intrinsic to cultivating that leadership?
Well, what do you think art teaches people?
I think art teaches people how to work together as a team. I think art teaches people to think innovatively. I think art teaches people to see the good, the bad, the ugly, and how to address the good, the bad, the ugly, how to change it. I think art teaches people how to be comfortable with who you are in the face of, you know, 10,000 people or one person or your own reflection. I think art teaches people how to teach other people. I don't know. I think art teaches people about humanity.
So I agree with you. I think art is basic to who we are as a species. Now, not everybody is going to want to make a life in the arts, but I think everybody has arts in their life, whether it's just, you know, things you enjoy, whether you go to the theater, whether you like music, whether you like painting. But also, you know, when we're kids, when you get together with a bunch of theater professionals and you have a script and you get a director and you cast it and you have rehearsals, what you put on is a play. And I don't think that's a coincidence in the English language, that when you're a child, what do? You go out with your other friends and you play. When you watch kids, they're constantly taking on roles. They're imitating what they see around them. They create these elaborate fantasies. They're playing. And at some point, you know, we grow up, we get more serious.
Oh, yeah.
We think we're not playing anymore.
We're still playing.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. Mm-hmm. We're always playing. And that I think was the thrust of your TED Talk. Plus, you know, it can be a career. I mean, you can, you know, you don't have to be a household name to be successful in the arts. You don't have to be a household name to feel you're successful in the arts. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody's going to go off and become, you know, a marquee star. As you point out in your TED Talk, entertainment is our country's, what, number one? Or
That's our number one export.
Our number one export.
And people are always like, that's not true. And I'm like, no, like, I think it was like $6.8 billion in tax returns last year for the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
I mean, go to any nation and ask them about, like, Beyonce, Cher, Leonardo DiCaprio. Like, it's translated into some, like, we are the cultural capital of the world.
Right, right. And my years in L.A., you know, I saw lots of, you know, I was friends with lots of people who, boy, they work, you know, they work hard. They were actors, they were writers, they were directors, some of whom have gone on to become, you know, names that you recognize.
Yeah.
Most of whom haven't. But they're still out there, you know, year after year, decade after decade, working, making a successful life. Mm. So, yeah. So you're graduating from UVA. We haven't even mentioned the fact that interspersed with all this, you started your own business.
Yeah.
So tell us about your business.
Yeah. So I opened a bow tie company. I just love bow ties.
Yeah, that's a very UVA thing, isn't it?
It is a very Southern thing, I think. It's a very, like, any school in the ACC or Big South can associate and identify with a bow tie. I mean, even a lot of the Northern, like, Northeastern schools, like Harvard, Yale, like, you know, a lot of the Ivies, they also rock a bow tie. So I think anyone can rock a bow tie. Like, from a high schooler, a lot of people in high schools, they have to wear bow ties or ties to, like, school because their dress code. So I'm like, what way to stand out and express your individuality than with a bow tie? But I started that through my class at UVA. We had to take a technical theater requirement, and I wasn't about physical labor doing, like, scenic design and all that. So I took costuming because I was like, why not sit behind a sewing machine and gossip with people? Because I felt like that'd be fun. And it was fun. And for our final project, we had to make our own project, like, our own design. And the Foxfield races were coming up, the annual horse races where everyone wears bow ties and Southern dresses, etc. And I really wanted to make a bow tie because I wanted to stand out and I didn't want to spend $70 on a bow tie. That's the key part. And I made one, and at the races, everyone was like, Andrew, these, like, bow ties are, like, amazing. Like, where did you get this bow tie? And I was like, I made it. So people were just like, ah, can I buy one from you? Will you make one for me if I pay you? And I was like, I mean, I guess. Like, I never really thought about that. So it just got to the point where I kept making so many that we had investors come on board, and now we just opened our space, our design space and kind of, like, business location on the downtown mall in Charlottesville, which is awesome.
So how does one get an Andrew Burrell custom bow tie?
Yeah, they could go to chateaudebeau.com. We are launching our website.
Okay, you better spell that for us.
Yes, it's chateaudebeau.com. We're also on Facebook. It is translated Chateau into the Beau. House of Beau.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
On the downtown mall. Now, is this going to be a walk-in space?
It is not at the moment.
Right.
With some of our current investors, we are definitely looking into making a global headquarters somewhere here in Charlottesville, which would have a both design aspect and a walk-in kind of purchasing aspect, which is awesome. But you can also find them in the UVA bookstore, soon to be as well as the Virginia shop here in Barracks Road and on the downtown mall. Some different local boutiques are going to be carrying them, as well as some different national boutiques very shortly.
And I've seen them. They are snappy ties, Andrew.
Ah, thank you.
And so okay, so you've graduated from UVA and you're starting your own business. End of story, right?
No. Never. The story must go on.
So where are you going?
I am going to Shenandoah Conservatory starting August 1st. I will be doing a master's degree in performing arts leadership and management. I am very, very excited.
telling me about Shenandoah Arts.
Yeah, Shenandoah is a thriving, thriving conservatory. It's one of the oldest conservatories on the East Coast.
And where is it?
In Winchester, Virginia, mm-hmm. which just so happens to be not that far from Charlottesville, so it's great.
Not that far, like an hour away.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And I'm most excited because I think I started out at a conservatory, and it was like all arts all the time, like 24 hours a day, and it was overwhelming because I think just my foundation and all of the like struggles that life brings with you. But at this point in my life, I think I'm a lot more settled and a lot more formed of who I am, what I stand for, what art I choose to stand for and promote. And I think that being surrounded 24 hours a day by brilliant instrumentalists, like dancers, singers, actors, I am just head over heels. Like, I'm just giddy. I'm so excited.
So you're going to be handy. So you're going to launch the business Chateau de Beau.
Yes.
And you're going to leave it to your good hands of your partners, and yep. you're going to go out to Shenandoah. How long is that program?
2 years.
2 years. All right. Thinking at the end of 2 years, we're going to see you back here in Charlottesville.
Absolutely. You'll see me at all the football games, all the basketball games, Fox Field. Any UVA event, I will be there. Come say hello.
My guest on the Wake Up Call has been Andrew Burrell, a man of boundless energy. Thank you so much for being here, Andrew, and for telling us your life story. You're an inspiring young man, and I hope that your story can inspire others as well. This is Sean McCord subbing on the Wake Up Call on 94.7 WPVC. Have a good Sunday, everyone.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.